Hey everyone, it's the Fretboard Journal's 87th podcast. This is Jason Verlinde. Today we have a great interview with dobro and steel guitarist Cindy Cash Dollar. Cindy is going to be featured in the Fretboard Journal's 35th issue in a great interview that was done by Andy Volk. But when I heard she was coming through town, I couldn't resist asking her to come and be a part of this podcast and also do a quick video with us. And she did that, and I'm really grateful for all that, and we had a great chat. No real plugs today. Go to fretboardjournal.com if you want to subscribe to the magazine, if you want to order back issues, if you want to order t-shirts, or just check out some of the cool online content such as this. And also go to fretboardsummit.com if you haven't yet. It's our giant big event. It's our 10th anniversary year, and in November we're going to be celebrating with a huge blowout party and festival in the Bay Area, and some of our favorite musicians as well as builders and historians will be there. Go to fretboardsummit.com for details. And without further ado, here is Cindy Cash Dollar. So, Cindy, you didn't even want to play, but you sounded fantastic.
Well, thank you. It's certain instruments I can play solo, but anyway, I was not prepared. But it's fun. It's always fun to play.
And what? Tell me about this beautiful green lap steel that you have.
This six-string lap steel, which I have in G tuning, open G. Was made by Jason Dumont of the Lap King Company.
And what, the world of lap steels and pedal steels is like its own little enclave.
It's the own universe.
Yeah. You play a variety of these, right? And do you play vintage too, or you play mostly new instruments?
I play a variety. I've found through the years, though, that as much as I love bringing vintage instruments on the road, it's just too much of a gamble anymore, especially with the gorillas that work for the airlines. So now when I go on the road, I play more contemporary made instruments. The other lap steel I usually play is an Asher lap steel made by Bill Asher that I keep in an open D tuning. And then I have a double neck 8-string non-pedal steel guitar that Herb Remington, who used to play for Bob Wilson, the Texas Playboys. He's alive and well, living in Houston, Texas. So he made me this beautiful double neck steel, and it sounds great, and it's wonderful for travel, especially since the four legs are very lightweight aluminum, because on my vintage Fender double neck I was playing, the legs themselves weighed 1 pound a piece. So I was having to put them in the suitcase with the clothes so the road case wouldn't go over.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's always Rubik's Cube, traveling with it.
Doing the math, holding a fish scale to see if the airlines will gouge you or not.
Yeah. But I love variety of music and instruments. I have a lot of acoustic instruments, too.
When you mention the Asher being in its own tuning, does it feel like sometimes with lap steels, like it was meant for this tuning and you don't stray?
Yes. Definitely.
And what do you think that is?
I just think they have their own kind of personalities and also sweet spots where they just seem like you can tell where they're very happy to be. It's like you can hear the smile when you're tuning.
Yeah.
It's like, I have a National Resophonic company makes a wonderful metal body baritone tricone. Mm-hmm. Which could be in D tuning or C tuning or B tuning. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be very happy in C or D. Just for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I have a Weissenborn that likes to be in C, and I have a Larry Pagriba Weissenborn. It's beautiful, big jumbo baritone, and that also seems to love the D tuning the best. So I don't know why.
Yeah. Do the builders who are providing you with these instruments are they ever clued in on this, or they just kind of give you the instrument and you find it yourself? Do they ever say, like, try it in D?
I think in the case of a baritone guitar, which, it's longer scale, and it wants to be, especially remember the older Dan Electro baritone guitars, they liked B, boy, or C. And I believe that the string sets made for those Dan Electros were, if I'm not mistaken, a set for B is in boy tuning.
Yeah.
So I think certain luthiers do have a tuning in mind, especially if they are musicians themselves.
Sure.
And they're hearing their instrument in a certain way and feeling that a certain tuning brings out the best of their instrument.
Yeah.
You know, but somebody making a resophonic guitar might think, and I would tend to believe too, that G might be the best.
Yeah.
As it's known as the dobro G tuning.
Sure.
Which I like, but I love to mess around with that too. You know, I'm always tuning like the second string way down to, you know, I like to fool around with tunings. I think it's really fun.
And where did, you know, I guess this starts off with how you got into music, but how, you know, how did you stumble upon the lap steel and the dobro and all that?
It was a process. I mean, I started playing just regular acoustic guitar when I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then just regular, like, folky strumming, learning basic chords.
Sure.
And then took some lessons from Rory Block and got into more of the country blues-based picking.
Yeah.
And then I heard John Fahey.
Uh-huh.
And there was something so haunting. It was a record, and I will admit, I mean, I was very young, but I bought the record just because of the cover.
Sure.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
A Rivers and Religion. And I believe it was one of very few, if not the only, records he played Bottleneck on.
Yeah.
So that's when I started, I discovered slide guitar, you know, so.
Through Fahey.
Yeah. And so I tried to figure out what tunings he was doing.
Sure.
Just from the record. And I will back up a little bit by saying that the lessons from Rory Block came way after that. I mean, she would have certainly been able to show me open tunings and slide guitar. The John Fahey discovery came way before that. So I spent a long time trying to figure that out. And
did you have help, or were you on your own in your bedroom trying?
On my own, you know, in my room. And, you know, got the little slide from, you know, the man that lived up the road that had the little guitar store in the basement of his house, you know. So, anyway, not much luck, but was making some noise. And then years later, heard someone playing dobro.
Yeah.
So in a club that I was waitressing in. And so I started taking dobro lessons. And that's what led to that form of slide guitar for me, which worked out fine.
Yeah.
And then went from that to lap steel. I was playing with Lee Von Helm and the Woodstock All-Stars, and you couldn't really hear the dobro with the pickups that were available back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was Rick Danko who loaned me a mellow bar guitar.
Uh-huh.
And it was weighed a ton. And so
this had how many strings? I forget.
I think it had 10, but I took them all off because I didn't know anything about that. All I knew was 6.
Sure.
So I had them all spaced out.
Oh, okay. Nice gap between,
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a matter of fact, that mellow bar was still sitting in the green room at Lee Von Helm's Midnight Ramble in Woodstock, New York.
It's still there.
And so one of the last shows that I did when Levon was there, Jimmy Vivino was there, and we were all in the dressing room, and there sat that mellow bar with the same 6 rusty strings on it.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Vivino said, "Oh my God, oh, it's a mellow bar. Oh my God, I gotta check this out. I haven't seen one of these in ages. Oh my God, what idiot took all the strings?" And I said, "Well, that was me a long time ago." But after that, I started to get 6-string lap steels and then started playing the non-pedal double neck 8-string guitar as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Just for something different to do.
Ever ventured into the world of the pedal steel? No?
Yes.
Yes.
And to me, it's like learning how to fly a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a very mathematical person. I think it takes a very linear type of brain to understand all the intricacies of what's going on at the same time with pedals.
Yeah.
With the pedals and the knee levers. And, you know, I think if I had started pedal steel very early on, it would have been great.
Yeah.
But it's fun to fool around with.
Yeah.
So in my next life, I thought, okay, pedal steel. But, you know, when I started the non-paddle as a hobby, I was very fortunate to be hired by Asleep at the Wheel.
Yeah.
And so that became my Western Swing boot camp.
Yep.
And I was so fortunate that they didn't want a pedal steel. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the Bob Wills and Texas Playboys genre, you know, the style of music they were doing. They were happy that it was not. So.
Yeah. And what, what are your general, let's get the broad overview of the gear that you're using right now. So it's, if it's a dobro gig, it's a Paul Beard?
Yes. Okay. Paul Beard Resophonic. I have a Mike Aldridge model.
Okay. And is it got a pick, it's, what's the pickup microphone situation?
Fishman pickup.
Okay.
And I use the Fishman, the Jerry Douglas Aura Imaging System pedal, which works great.
Okay.
And I also use a very tiny bit of analog delay with the dobro and a tiny bit of reverb. Everything very, just enough for presence.
Okay. And
but in the studio acoustic.
Acoustic, okay. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this lap steel. Is this kind of your main, you're playing right now with Albert Lee? Is this kind of what you're gonna go gig with all the time?
It pretty much is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I retired the wonderful lap steel that my ex-husband made me. But I also have this great lap steel with a magnet pickup that G.E. Smith gave me that I love to play sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple of very cool Gibson lap steels. So I don't know, it just kind of depends. A lot of the stuff, the different stuff I will bring to a studio session.
Sure.
Just to have a nice different sound. But on the road right now, my go-to lap steels are this Lap King Rodeo and Bill Asher's Electro Hawaiian.
Yeah, and then what amp?
Right, Remington Double Neck. Amp, I keep going back and forth. but right now, Fender Twin, just because when you're traveling, that seems to be the easiest backline you can get.
Yeah.
If it's just steel guitar, I love Fender's Steel King with a big 15-inch speaker. They don't make them, but you can still get them.
Yep.
But the Fender Twin is pretty much
the
reissue, the way to go. And I have a pedal board with, you know, a lot of different things on it.
What are the main pedals?
Well, I have MXR carbon copy for delay. And for compression, it's a wonderful dual compression pedal made by Slide Rig.
Okay.
That I love.
Okay.
So if anybody loves that Lowell George lap steel sound, but I think that's it. It's a wonderful, almost opaque compression that really doesn't take away the tone from your instrument.
Yep.
And then I have three pedals from Durham Electronics, which are handmade in Austin, Texas. One is called the Sex Drive.
Okay.
Which is like I call the Wonder Bra of pedals. It just kind of boosts and lifts and just makes everything better.
Okay.
And
with a name like that, it should.
Yes. Yeah. And then for overdrive, I have two pedals. One is the Mucho Busto.
Okay.
Which I love. You can have a little or a lot.
Yep.
And then I've also got Durham Electronics Crazy Horse, which is overdrive and fuzz tone.
Okay.
And that's a real fun one. And a Boss tuner.
And you're using those two together? Or you're using...
No.
One on one guitar, one on the other?
Yeah. If I'm playing a gig that's especially more rock and blues, I go back and forth. If I do a song where I feel like a little more, a different type of overdrive is needed, then I'll use the Crazy Horse with just a little bit of fuzz added to it. It's a totally different sounding overdrive than the Mucho Busto.
Okay.
If I want just basic, you know, overall not too insane overdrive, then I just stick with the Mucho Busto with the Sex Drive always on.
Okay.
And then the Slide Rig Compression Intermittent.
And this is just a board that you would take to any session? Do you kind of just leave it intact and all locked in?
Yes. It's big. And for the tour with Albert Lee it's been dismantled, and just because of travel purposes, I'm lightening the load a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of down to basics.
Everyone asks you, you've done so many sessions, everyone asks you about Time Out of Mind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious less about, I'm sure you've got good Dylan stories, but I'm curious just working with Daniel Lanois, who's also playing these instruments. Was there anything interesting that came out of that, either how he was recording or his direction to you, or did you guys geek out on gear at all? Or
no.
Okay.
There was no time to geek out on gear.
Yeah.
That was one of many interesting components from recording Time Out of Mind.
Yeah.
There were so many musicians set up live. You know, there was two of everything, pretty much. There really wasn't time to get quote-unquote sounds on everybody.
Yeah.
Because I remember saying to Daniel, well, what about when I'm switching from steel to dobro? Don't we want to... can we get some sounds now? Can we get a microphone put up just for the dobro acoustically? He's like, just grab that SM57 off your amp and just swing it around and use that.
Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah.
So, but that was the beauty of working with Daniel and Bob in those sessions. It was just really all about, I think, the music and also the sound that you hear on Time Out of Mind is exactly what it sounded like in the studio at Criteria in Miami. Just that kind of dark, cavernous. I mean, it's amazing. When the CD came out, I thought, wow, it brought me right back to sitting at those recording sessions. And I thought, wow, this is very interesting. You know, it's just set it up and go.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, there wasn't any time to go over charts. You know, it's pretty much off the cuff.
And in the moment, though, were you kind of like, what is this going to sound like? Because it was rushed? Or
no, I was trying not to think at all.
Okay.
Because I realized early on, it's like, you cannot. I mean, and pretty much, to me, you try and approach a lot of work. I do, as many musicians and artists do like that. You know, sometimes you start thinking you get in trouble.
Yep.
So, but I realized that was a very important component of those sessions. You can't think. You just have to get in there and play.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, are you still, you've moved back to Woodstock, are you still doing sessions like always, or are you slowing down on those?
I've done one, so because I landed there April 5th.
Okay.
And unpacked and kind of got, you know, the reentry of it all, because I hadn't been there in 23 years.
Yep.
But I did do one session, and it was very, very sweet to do that, and a couple of gigs, and then left to go on the road with Albert Lee. So hopefully when I get back, I've noticed that a couple of these studios that I used to work at are still there.
That's great.
And to reconnect with people. We were talking about David Torn earlier. I would love to say hi to him again.
Totally. Yeah,
and
you hinted at a new record. Can you say anything about it at this point?
Oh yeah, I'm finally. I mean, my first and only CD, Slideshow, came out, I think, in 2004.
Okay.
So I'm finally working on a new CD, and Slideshow was a lot of presentation of the different styles and sounds of slide and steel guitar, both acoustic and electric, with so many different guests on it.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, Jorma Kaukonen and Sonny Landreth and Steve James and Mike Aldridge and tons of people. And this CD is kind of the same. It's got a lot of guests.
Yeah.
But it's, I think, just, it's a little different. It's taking shape. Like, I can feel it taking shape sonically, but I can't quite figure out what it is yet.
Okay.
But it's coming together very beautifully. So I recorded 5 tracks that are more blues-based in Austin before I moved.
Yep.
And so happy to get Ray Benson on a track, and Derek O'Brien and Johnny Nicholas and Hell Bent, which was the band I was working with before I moved from Austin. But a lot of Austin folks.
Yeah.
And then I just came back from Louisiana recording a track with Sonny Landreth that came out so beautifully.
Yeah.
And we might do another one, and I hope to get a track with Albert. Our schedule's a little crazy, so it's
hard to
have one day and then go in the studio. But
you could have just brought him here.
I could have, but I'm really excited. I've got a lot more original compositions on this CD, and I hope to finish it by the end of the year. I don't have a title.
Yeah.
But it's just been great fun so far, and it's not such a bad thing waiting this long. I think it's okay.
Totally.
Yeah.
Cindy, thank you so much for talking.
Thank you. Yeah. I absolutely love your magazine. I'm such a fan. I'm so happy to be doing this, so thank you so much.
Oh, and Andy Vogt wrote a great profile on you. It's going to be out in the fall for our magazine.
He's a wonderful, wonderful writer. So,
he's got the steel beat for us, you know. It's its own universe, as I said, yeah.
Well, he is the man to do it, so yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you.